Welcome to On the Beat, where we bring you a different Buffalo Bills beat reporter every week, exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network. Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to On the Beat on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. I'm John Feeney, your host for today, and as you heard in the intro, On the Beat each week, we bring you an exclusive interview with beat reporters and journalists that we get to hear their insights on all things Buffalo Bills. I'm your host today. I'm John Feeney. You can find me on X at John Feeney or on Instagram at JohnFeeney70. Please head on over to YouTube. Like and subscribe. Check us out on Twitter and Facebook, where we broadcast live. And of course, share with a friend. Head on over there, subscribe, share the show, copy, paste. If you hate us, if you love us, either way, get into the comments section and just tell us what you think. And if you're listening to this recorded, share it with a friend. Jump over to YouTube. Let's have some fun. I am one of the hosts of the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network, along with Joe Miller and my former Buffalo Bills colleague and now podcast colleague, Jerry Ostrowski. I am absolutely over the moon excited today to tell you that my very special guest is Vic Carucci. And I just have to say, you can't find a guest who has more history with the NFL and the Buffalo Bills than Vic. And even beyond that, I'll give you his bio later. I can't even give a synopsis. But first of all, Vic, welcome to the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network.
John, it is an absolute pleasure to be with you and the show. And when Joe Miller reached out to me, it was like a no-brainer to want to be a part of this. And knowing you and knowing Jerry O all those years, And I say this not to be schmaltzy here or too warm and fuzzy, but because the interaction between media and players isn't always that. We all know that. However, covering you guys brings back some of the best memories of this long career, really, being around that team and the camaraderie and how we, in many ways, even though I'm much, much older than you, but we kind of grew up together, right? We kind of grew up together in the NFL.
A little bit. And Vic, thanks for that. Again, genuinely pleased to have you on the show. For our listenership, honestly, I wasn't going to read Vic's bio, but it's so impressive that it bears me reading it. Thank you for preparing it. So I'm going to give this the run through, because anyone who hears the show and then thinks that you don't know what you're talking about will be out of their mind. Okay, so you can stand tall for this one, but everybody, Vic Carucci has spent nearly five decades covering the NFL as a writer, broadcaster. He's authored 11 books about pro football, including multiple New York Times bestsellers, and has received several national and state writing awards. Vic has two stints covering the Bills and the NFL for the Buffalo News. He began his NFL media career covering the Eagles for South Jersey Courier-Post. Ooh, Eagles. Since 2004, he's been a co-host on Sirius XM. You can still catch his show on Saturdays from 10 to 2. He also is a Bills and NFL analyst for WGRZ-TV. That's WGRZ.com. Head over and catch Vic Carucci's great content. In 1999, the NFL named Vic the first national editor for NFL Insider magazine. He also became the first full-time columnist for NFL.com, a move that helped spark the trend of longtime print journalists crossing over to digital platforms, including those at ESPN, CBS, and Fox. While with NFL.com, Vic made regular appearances on the NFL Network. After 12 seasons with NFL.com, the Cleveland Browns had the foresight to hire Vic to oversee their internal media entities as senior editor. In addition, he became the first host of the newly created Cleveland Browns Daily radio program, broadcasting from a studio constructed in the heart of the team facility on Cleveland's ESPN radio affiliate. The show became a programming and business model that today other NFL teams follow, including our beloved Buffalo Bills. For more than a decade, Vic has served on the selection committee for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Wow. And is a member of its coach contributor subcommittee. In addition, he's on the voting panel for the Associated Press's All-Pro team and individual postseason awards. Wow. Vic is past president, vice president for the Professional Football Writers of America. Take a breath. Take a bow, Vic. I'm going to give you a little, man, that's a lot. I don't think I'm going to complete half of that in my entire lifetime. Congratulations to you.
Thank you, John. I'm blessed. It's been so much fun. And every now and then you have to pinch yourself and then remind yourself, one of these days, someone's going to tap you on the shoulder and say, you know what, you better get a real job. This stuff about being around sports and the NFL and watching games for a living. But there is much more to it than that. And what I've appreciated the most is the people connections. That's what it's about. Is, you know, we love to, I know, get into strategy and everybody, especially with the advent of Madden and all of its incarnations, has become an expert on play calling, on being amateur offensive coordinators or amateur GMs. And everybody wants to think about those intricate details of the game. And I love that. But honestly, the best part of it from a media perspective, from the writing, the broadcasting, is the people you get to meet and know, the stories you get to share and tell. Because I think people generally are more interested in other people than they are in X's and O's, I think.
Vic, I got to tell you, as long as you've been at it, the people that you know and that respect you for your hard work, diligence, and insight, you should probably have some encryption on your Gmail contacts, right? That's like a gold mine. I figure you probably reach as high up as it gets and you get responses. And I think, just to, blow your horn a little bit here, I you've always brought a very thoughtful approach to the way you interacted with players, and I'm certain with coaches and GMs and people of that nature. And I think it's that sort of personality trait, that approachability, that honesty and genuine nature that you bring, that really helped you cultivate this over time. And you say blessed, you say lucky, you say not on the shoulder, but I think if people were to really spend some time with you during the day and understand the type of work that you do, they would understand the old adage that says, the harder I work, the luckier I seem to get. And I don't think that the game is done with you, Vic, until you want to hang up your cleats on your own.
Thanks, John, for all of that. I think it's worth mentioning, to your point about how you treat other people. And look, I haven't cornered the market on that, and I've made my share of boo-boos and big mistakes in those dealings. I've had, going back to, I still have the image of in my mind of a piece that wasn't the most complimentary of a former NFL kicker named Tony Franklin. You probably remember him. He, was a player had joined the Eagles from Texas A&M. And you remember Russell Erksleben from Texas, and the two of them were the barefoot guys kickers. Anyway, things had just weren't going very well for him. In terms of how he was he's a kicker too. And that's another thing. I get it.
Oh yeah.
Right. The kicker.
It's a whole different deal.
And it wasn't the most complimentary piece I had done about him for the Sporting News when I was corresponding for them. And I just remember this day, Westchester State College in Pennsylvania. We're in the cafeteria training camp, and I'm sitting, usually the media were sitting kind of in one area, players and then in another, coaches. And he comes just sauntering over and slams his tray down in front of me, and he said, "Just so you know, we're never talking again," and picks up his tray and walks away. We actually would speak again, but that's the kind of thing. And look, you and I mean, when I interviewed you, I remember this, and I like this. It's a good thing, but it's also a tough thing. You challenge. It wasn't just, and I know this wasn't just reserved for me. There were others who covered that team, and I sensed that you listened to the question, and I would appreciate this more later than I did then. Our goal was to elicit the best response we could get. Get the quote. Get the guy. Not gotcha, but just get you to open up. And you, unfortunately for us, were smart enough to think about the question, think about the answer and not just blurt out your first thought. And that sucked for us. Like, I would much rather have had more of a spontaneous reaction. Sometimes your spontaneous reaction was, you know, kind of like, what are you saying? Or what are you trying to get here? That kind of thing. And that's okay. But I felt that, okay, you got a challenge with John, and know that when you go into it, be prepared. And I think it applies to everybody. And sadly, I don't know that it happens as much as it should in the way media has evolved. And obviously social media, when you were playing, when I was covering that team, the whole idea was basically the conduit was right, a print media, more or less. That was the primary between you and the fan. Now, essentially, players don't really need to do much of anything. I think the contract's still boilerplate that there's got to be some level of cooperation, but podcasts and, you know, and whatever, X and Facebook, sure. Instagram, yeah. It's you run your own publishing and broadcasting outfits as players.
Well, to be fair, Vic, I learned my lesson because of a boo-boo that I made, right? I opened my mouth and then I regretted it later. And it sort of molded my interactions with the locker room media. And, you know, I was like, well, you know, maybe I need to take a breath before I speak. And being Sicilian, you being Italian or Sicilian, you know how that is, man. You said somebody says something, the first thing you want to do is choke them out. But I made a couple of boo-boos, a couple of comments that I still remember today that I would like to have back. And you mentioned social media, and I think that was probably the hardest part for players in our day, is our connection to the public was only through the vessel of Vic Carucci and others. And we didn't have that ability to amplify our own voice. Like, so we became, and don't take this negatively, more or less like an object of derision or object of, lauding. And the problem with that is you never, as a player, were able to have the megaphone to say, this is who I am. This is the person I am. And again, even so, players have this. They still open up their mouth and shove a giant size 16 foot into it. And, they run off of emotion, but it's a testosterone-driven sport. You're never going to take that out of the player. The locker rooms are always going to reek of, you know, alpha males. And it's always this blend of how do I manage myself, manage my interactions a little bit better. But thanks for that, Vic. Big Newsweek, right, in Buffalo, right? Yeah. Signings, quarterback signings around the league. I want to dive right into this. And, you know, we see that Jared Goff just signed a new deal. Tua is probably an impending deal. Josh Allen, who I think wisely the Bills extended when they did, now looks like he could be pushed out of the top 10 ranked or top 10 paid quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And I want to hear your insight on how much does that matter to him? Was it a bargain then? Do they extend him now? What's your overall take on how the Bills handle Josh?
Well, first, the main point you made about the timing of the Bills extending this deal and having that foresight, and that's really the most, I would say, among the more critical decisions that a GM has to make, is when do you do the extension on the quarterback? When do you identify that you've got the guy, the franchise guy? And how many teams are seemingly, you know, almost paralyzed by that decision? They at some point they go forth with it and follow the market, but then you still say to yourself, they're paying that guy that much? What is
Kirk Cousins?
Right? Yeah, there you go. You know, go. It's a list. I mean, it's a list. Okay. So that said, number one, the Bills did that, had the foresight to do that and put themselves in excellent shape. Number two, the Bills have been very fortunate that Josh, especially obviously his representation has been cooperative with the restructuring that they've done. And to remind people, it doesn't mean he's been sitting there taking pay cuts. They've just moved money around. If anything, they've given him more current money than future money for the sake of salary cap room creation, right? It's just messing with the books, so to speak. Still the same number, still the same pay. But by him doing that, or them doing that with him, he in fact is doing them a favor, but I think it's also done with an understanding that at some point, the next time they talk to him, it will be, okay, where is mine and what's and what kind of pay raise? Because I believe, John, he's, if the math is right, somewhere at 10th and possibly even a little lower in quarterback rank pay. And there's no way that many quarterbacks should be paid more than Josh Allen on deserving talent. He is.
Well, Vic, here's the list. It's Burrow, Goff, Herbert, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Mahomes, Kirk Cousins, and Josh Allen does sit at 10.
So he's right at 10.
And does that matter? In our day, when Jim was the highest paid quarterback, the dollars were nothing what they are now.
No. But does it matter? Okay. The short answer has to be yes, because I do think there is, as limited as the time, the playing time is for an NFL player. And again, I'm talking to an NFL, former NFL player about this. You know this far better than I do, but you're in a snap to snap existence. And I think especially at the quarterback position, as important as you are, as vital as you are to the team's fortunes, there is a pay ranking that does matter and that will matter. I think any quarterback, any player who tells you it doesn't is lying. Now, I will quote the wisdom of the great Wade Phillips, who once told me when we were having a discussion about a particular player's desire to be paid more, when he was on the Bills, we were in Fredonia, we were at training camp, and he's sitting on a golf cart, and we were just kind of shooting the breeze about it. And he says, but tell me this. I don't know if I get my Wade imitated. Oof,
that was rough, Beck.
He goes, tell me this. He goes, when was the last time you went to Canton and on the plaque they showed how much salary the player made? And I said, never. Yeah, that's the point. The bio of the player never shows his salary. So – And that player is, you know, those players in Canton for their greatness, is it about their what they made, their accumulation of Canton? No. But I would also say that when you, and especially the fan base, and this matters too, the reaction of fans, media, to the idea that Josh Allen's here and quarterbacks who don't have his level of statistical accomplishment, doesn't have the rings, doesn't have the championships, but statistical accomplishments are up here. And that can be driving the problem too.
Yeah. Well, you know, that all blends in with the cap and the window and how committed are you to building a young team that takes, you know, a good deep run in the playoffs, goes to the Super Bowl, win or loss. Right. So I wonder now, because the dollars are so much bigger, and maybe beyond a reasonable appreciation from what they were in the mid-90s, does a guy like Josh hang on to the ego and say, I need to be in the top five and I'll sacrifice, you know, cap hell again? Or do I say, wow, I've made $250 million, maybe another $250 million, and I maybe slide out of the top 10, but I give our team a chance to not fall into that? I wonder who is that guy. If not Josh Allen, who is that guy?
Therein is the balance. Somehow, I mean, if we think about Tom Brady, right? Am I allowed to say that name on a Bills?
You can say anything you want. I didn't hate Tom. I hated the Dolphins back then because
that was the
Patriots were a doormat.
Right. They weren't your nemesis version of the Bills, but they obviously were with this one. But look, Tom. In many ways, Tom was that guy who did figure it out contractually, that he was part of something really good, and that the only way to keep it good was to do what he did from a pay standpoint. I also think that the Chiefs, in many ways, have figured it out with Patrick Mahomes, but part of figuring that out is allowing younger bodies to come in, draft picks to come in and replenish that way and coach them up. And, you know, you're not, I mean, yes, are you, is there skill to identifying the talent? There's also some good fortune to get it right. But you look at what they've done and how they really remade themselves, reinvented themselves last season as a defensive oriented team, right? And then they win a second Super Bowl in a row, primarily with that as their foundation. They still had Patrick Mahomes playing well, making enough plays to win, but it was just enough. It wasn't that they were this dominant offensive machine. And I think there's something to be said for how you see your big picture. And this is on your GM and of course your coaching staff. And you better be united, and you better have continuity. Not only that, continuity and years. I'd say where you see that success to the question of how the teams have figured out how to manage a franchise, paying a franchise quarterback and still having a good enough roster accompanying him. It's those teams that have had GMs and coaches in place for a while.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I mean, and I look at it now and the State Farm dollars for Patrick Mahomes probably replaces at least, you know, half a season of revenue or income. And if Josh is able to do that, you know, hopefully, you know, we can see the forest for the trees and try to figure out a way to manage that better. Thanks for your insight on that, Vic. I do want to, you know, the news of the week, obviously, is we signed Marquez Valdes-Scantling, say that five times fast. And just before that, we signed Chase Claypool. And now you've got a wide receiver room that includes Mac Hollins, Curtis Samuel, Shorter, Shakir. How do you see this move? What's the strategy? How do you think it shakes down? And who do you think really is the marquee players, 1, 2, and 3, coming out of that, excluding Dalton Kincaid, because I want to talk wide receivers.
Okay. I think it's fascinating how they're putting this post Stephon Diggs receiver room, post Gabe Davis receiver room together. How many teams actually that are still in the contender category wipe out their first two guys and start over? That's what they're doing. But they're doing it, and this is important to note too, without and it could this change between now and the start of camp or June, the June cuts, let's say June, using that because that's when the Tre'Davious White money comes off the cap books and it's a double-digit chunk of cap space, millions. That yeah. said, I'd still say that it's been done in a conservative way, somewhat of a bargain basement way. I don't know that you truly have genuine 1 and 2, however order you want to put Chase Claypool and Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I think they're both in their own way accomplished enough to have roles, but how much do they really have a main hitting guy? And I don't think, and I also would add that, that Keon Coleman doesn't really fit that yet. I think he's a young, very raw guy, just turning 21 this month. So much to learn about route running in the NFL, so much to learn about getting off of press coverage that he's going to face in ways that he didn't see as a college player by the kind of talent that he'll see in off-season workouts, training camp, whenever it gets more physical.
And intense, yeah.
Intense. And then the rest of the group is the rest of the group. The other names you mentioned will round it out. So is it calling it receiver by committee sounds a little dismissive. So I may not quite want to say it that way, but for the sake of our discussion, I think it has to sort of sort itself out in terms of what we start seeing in percentage of snap time. And the other overarching picture with this group is what? Size. They're all taller, bigger, more physical. Now, Valdes-Scantling comes in with more speed to go with the size that he has. And I would say that they with Samuel, I think they also found he was a guy that what was he, a 4.3 40 guy, I think, out of college, Curtis Samuel, but his quote that stands with me for the longest time, Joe Brady, while Joe was with him in Carolina, said the following, that you can't measure his accomplishments all in statistics. It's the downfield blocking. It's that gritty stuff that he's willing to do. And you know, Sean McDermott loves a guy like that, but fantasy team owners don't love a guy like that.
No, they don't.
He's not putting up numbers. So I'm not saying I know he won't put up any kind of numbers here, but it doesn't feel, John, like that's really the approach. It feels like this offense will also, and I can't give you the deepest definition of it, but I'll say in general terms, Joe Brady's signature will be on this offense in a much greater way than it was a year ago. Understandably, he was a half season as coordinator. Now that he's had a full off season to kind of prepare the playbook his way and has a better understanding of everybody kind of around him. And of course he's gaining that with new faces. And think of the size, think of more power, think San Francisco, think of that. I can see this team trying to be a little more like that than say the Chiefs.
I don't disagree with you. I think, you know, we brought in these two guys, right? MVS, Marcus, yeah, MVS got a little issue with the dropsies, right? So obviously he's going to have to overcome that little demon, right? And he's going to have to show that he's sure-handed. Chase Claypool brings his own kind of baggage, right? A career that started pretty impressive, ends up in Chicago, and well, I guess that's where everything goes to die. But, you know, you look at a guy like that, will he have a resurgence? And then you marry him up with Samuel, Mac Hollins, and then a young Keon Coleman. I think layering in what you said about Joe Brady, and everybody always talks about work in the offseason that players do, but football is an imitation game. And there's a lot of exciting things happening in football between philosophy and scheme. And I think a blended, big, quick wide receiver room allows you to really coordinate who is going to be in alignments for a particular play against a team that shows particular defenses. Do you think that is part of the strategy?
Oh, absolutely. Because nothing happens in a vacuum. Right. And I think this was Marv Levy, I think, preached that probably more than anybody, that to think of teams as, OK, offense is in its own world and defense is its own world and specialty. There has to be that blended thought. And I tend to feel that when it comes to the Bills, when you've got a head coach that has whose core mentality is defense. It's defensive rooted. I think the decisions, how it's built, coincides with that. And even though Brandon Bean's the one who's in charge of the selection of talent, but he does so with the profile of what McDermott is looking for. And he has to. It doesn't work if he's picking the guys that he hopes get Pro Bowl status or something and not help with Super Bowl rings.
Right.
So I say that because I think this offense could very well be designed that look, you still have one of the great passers, one of the great playmakers that the Bills have ever had at the quarterback position in Josh Allen. You will take advantage of that, but will there be more thought to how you can also, especially this year, how you can do things offensively that help the defense that is much younger now, that has really been gutted in so many ways, lost those players on the back end that were leaders as well. And right. You're replacing that. And what do you have up front? What is this pass rush going to look like? I can't sit here and tell you, oh yeah, Von Miller is going to be back to the fullest form he was when he arrived.
Or Matt Milano. Right? There are question marks all over that defense. Yep. Which leads me, and we're running thin on time.
Okay.
I want to kind of dig in real quick. You get the Diggs money, right, in June. What are you going to – Vic, you're Brandon Bean. What are you going to do with it?
I'd say that I don't do a splash move because this team is not one splash player away from being a Super Bowl winner. I think you build with what you have. This year may be a step or a half step back from what you were. and then you go for the gusto again in 25.
Ooh, okay. Win in other ways. Try to make a push, even though we back up just a little bit. Is there a position or a name out there? You said not a splash name. Is there something out there that appeals to you? That is a piece that you see we need.
I don't. The names you're going to hear about possibly by then. Is it like T. Higgins or the names that have been kind of lingering as potential trade possibilities, acquisition possibilities? But look, John, you're going to end up paying the receiver money. The receiver market has just gone up like a shot. So the guys like Chase Claypool and Valdez-Scanlon came in to you on bargain kind of pricing because they don't have that piece of that market. Other players do. And I would say it's going to be, to me, a more conservative. The money you just were got rid of by having Diggs out the door next year, really, because it's Tre'Davious White's contract that's going to be the omission in June. Are you turning around and then paying a receiver even more than you were paying Diggs?
And getting yourself back into the same trouble.
Yeah. Yep.
I think I like the strategy, Vic. I look at it and say, hey, Chase, hey, MVS, Curtis Samuel, we're bringing you here for a reason. You may not be here, but this is your chance to break into that market. You have your breakout season. They don't say it, so to speak, but a resurgence to your career, an opportunity to really market your skills. And if it fits, we resign you. And if it doesn't, we let you go.
Right.
But by and large, it's the productivity, like not the downfield blocking, but the productivity that you measure in receptions, yards after the catch, maybe touchdowns. Vic, I'm going to go with one final question because we're thin here. Just your takeaway from the draft or rookie minicamp. You don't have everybody's talked Keon Coleman to death. If you look at the draft, top two favorite picks and what they mean to the impact for hopefully this season.
I have one favorite pick, and that's Dwayne Carter. I think that was outstanding. And while they need more than one guy to produce and be a factor this season because of the situation with their cap, they need young and cap-friendly, friendlier contracts to contribute. That said, I think Dwayne Carter can make the kind of impact because of the frequent rotation of defensive linemen, especially the big guys in the middle, compliment to Ed Oliver, quick penetrator, smart, instinctive. He's got all the qualities, and he brings a sense of leadership, frankly, that I think goes beyond his years.
Terrific. And just so you know, Dwayne Carter is from the University Duke University, the Blue Devils. And Vic, if you didn't see, my son, Bruno, went into the transfer portal, and he has landed as a Duke Blue Devil yesterday.
I didn't pick Carter because of that, but John, I want to tell you, I'm happy for you, for your son, for your whole family. Such great pride there, and God bless, you know.
And thank you so much. My youngest boy, Roman, also has an offer at Duke, and they might overlap a single year. My daughters are doing great. I can't leave them out. Vic, obviously you're doing great. Vic, before I get us out of here, just quick final thoughts. Anything about your fandom of the Bills, or tell us a little bit more. Plug your show, your shows, your content.
So real quick, it's been a nice, great life change in the last few years. I retired from the Buffalo News, but I definitely keep a hand, and I use the word dabble. Maybe it's a little more than that in NFL media. I have worked with SiriusXM NFL Radio Channel 88 since it started in 2004, and have had a regular show there, weekly show, Saturdays. I do fill-ins during the week, but Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and then Eastern time, and then Channel 2 in Buffalo, WGRZ, Adam Benigni, now John Scott, who's the new sports director, and it's been a great experience with them. As soon as I left the Buffalo News retired, they signed me up to be a part-timer contributor. And we have our weekly show every Monday night called Sports Talk Live Buffalo. And it's a blast, a studio show, that we primarily talk Bills, but we also have a lot of Sabre conversation there. Just happy. And I got four grandkids, that this semi-retirement allows me to spend more time with.
Wow. Wow. Vic Carucci, love him or hate him. I love him now. I was a little indifferent early on, but thanks for joining us on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. You've heard from Vic Carucci. Go find him on XM Radio, WGRZ.com. Pick up his content. If you love it or hate it, you cannot deny that Vic knows what he's talking about, that he's done the research, he's put in the effort, he's built the relationship. So I'm John Fina. That's Vic Carucci on behalf of Jerry Ostrowski, legend, Joe Miller, the voice. You've been listening to On the Beat on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. Vic Carucci, we end our show with Go Bills. Can you give me a Go Bills?
Go Bills.
Go Bills!